If their hearts had been in it, I would have died. I've seen actual mobs of bloodthirsty dryads attack. It's not something any mortal could live through. These tree spirits seemed more interested in just playing the part. They staggered toward me, yelling "Rawr!" while occasionally glancing over their shoulders to make sure the torch-bearing demigods hadn't set fire to their life sources. I dodged the first two palm tree spirits who lunged at me. "I won't fight you," I yelled. A sturdy ficus jumped on me from behind, forcing me to throw her off. "We're not enemies!" A fiddle-leaf fig was hanging back, perhaps waiting for her turn to get me, or just hoping she wouldn't get noticed. Her demigod keeper noticed, though. He lowered his torch, and the fig tree went up in flames, as if it had been doused in oil. The dryad screamed and combusted, collapsing in a heap of ash.
"Stop it," Meg said,
but her voice was so fragile it barely registered. The other dryads attacked me in earnest. Their fingernails stretched into talons. A lemon tree sprouted thorns all over her body and tackled me in a painful hug.
"Stop it,"
Meg said louder this time.
"Oh, let them try, my dear,"
Nero said, as the trees piled onto my back.
"They deserve their revenge."
The ficus got me in a chokehold. My knees buckled under the weight of six dryads. Thorns and talons raked every bit of exposed skin. I croaked, "Meg!" My eyes bulged, my vision blurred.
"Stop!"
Meg ordered. The dryads stopped. The ficus sobbed with relief and released her hold around my neck. The others backed off, leaving me on my hands and knees, gasping, bruised and bleeding. Meg ran to me. She knelt and put her hand on my shoulder, studying my scrapes and cuts and my ruined, bandaged nose with an agonized expression. I would have been overjoyed to get this attention from her if we hadn't been in the middle of Nero's throne room, or if I could just, you know, breathe. Her first whispered question was not the one I'd been expecting.
"Is Lou alive?"
I nodded, blinking away tears of pain. "Last I saw," I whispered back.
"Still fighting."
Meg's brow furrowed. For the moment, her old spirit seemed rekindled. But it was difficult to visualize her the way she used to be. I had to concentrate on her eyes, framed by her wonderfully horrible cat-eye glasses, and ignore the new wispy haircut, the smell of lilac perfume, the purple gown and gold sandals, and, oh gods, someone had given her a pedicure. I tried to contain my horror. "Meg," I said, "there's only one person here you need to listen to. Yourself. Trust yourself." I meant it. Despite all my doubts and fears, despite all my complaints over the months about Meg being my master, she had chosen me. But I had also chosen her. I did trust her. Not in spite of her past with Nero, but because of it. I had seen her struggle. I'd admired her hard-won progress. I had to believe in her for my own sake. She was, God's help me, my role model. I pulled her gold rings from my pocket. She recoiled when she saw them, but I pressed them into her hands. "You are stronger than he is." If I could have just kept her looking nowhere but at me, perhaps we could have survived in a small bubble of our old friendship, even surrounded by Nero's toxic environment. But Nero couldn't allow that.
"Oh, my dear," he sighed. "I appreciate your kind heart. I do. But we can't interfere with justice."
Meg stood and faced him.
"This isn't justice."
His smile thinned. He glanced at me with a mixture of humor and pity, as if saying, "Now look what you've done."
"Perhaps you're right, Meg,"
he conceded.
"These dryads don't have the courage or the spirit to do what's necessary."
Meg stiffened, apparently realizing what Nero intended to do.
"No.
We will have to try something else."
He gestured to the demigods, who lowered their torches into the plants.
"No!"
Meg screamed. The room turned green. A storm of allergens exploded from Meg's body as if she'd released an entire season of oak pollen in a single blast. Verdant dust coated the throne room. Nero, his couch, his guards, his rugs, his windows, his children. The demigod's torch flames sputtered and died. The dryad's trees began to grow. Roots breaking through their pots and anchoring to the floor. New leaves unfurling to replace the singed ones. Branches thickening and stretching out, threatening to entangle their demigod minders. Not being complete fools, Nero's children scrambled away from their newly aggressive houseplants. Meg turned to the dryads. They were huddled together, trembling, burn marks steaming on their arms.
"Go heal," she told them. "I'll keep you safe."
With a grateful collective sob, they vanished. Nero calmly brushed the pollen from his face and clothes. His Germani seemed unperturbed, as if this sort of thing happened a lot. One of the cynocephali sneezed. His wolf-headed comrade offered him a Kleenex.
"My dear Meg,"
Nero said, his voice even.
"We've talked about this before. You must control yourself."
Meg clenched her fists.
"You didn't have the right. It wasn't fair."
"Now, Meg,"
his voice hardened, letting her know that his patience was strained.
"Apollo might still be allowed to live, if that's really what you want. We don't have to surrender him to Python. But if we're going to take that kind of risk, I'll need you at my side with your wonderful powers. Be my daughter again. Let me save him for you."
She said nothing. Her stance radiated stubbornness. I imagined her putting down her own roots, mooring herself in place. Nero sighed.
"Everything becomes much, much harder when you wake the beast. You don't want to make the wrong choice again, do you? And lose someone else like you lost your father."
He gestured to his dozen pollen-covered Germani, his pair of cynocephali, his seven demigod foster children, all of whom glared at us as if they, unlike the dryads, would be quite happy to tear us to pieces. I wondered how quickly I could retrieve my bow. Though I was in no shape for combat, I wondered how many opponents Meg could handle with her scimitars. Good as she was, I doubted she could fend off 21. Then there was Nero himself, who had the constitution of a minor god. Despite her anger, Meg couldn't seem to make herself look him in the face. I imagined Meg making these same calculations, perhaps deciding that there was no hope, that the only possibility of sparing my life was to give in to Nero.
"I didn't kill my father,"
she said, her voice small and hard.
"I didn't cut off Lou's hands, or enslave those dryads, or twist us all up inside."
She swept a hand toward the other demigods of the household.
"You did that, Nero. I hate you."
The Emperor's expression turned sad and weary.
"I see. Well, if you feel that way."
"It's not about feelings," Meg snapped. "It's about the truth. I'm not listening to you. And I'm not using your weapons to fight my fights anymore.
She tossed her rings away. A small, desperate yelp escaped my throat. Nero chuckled.
That, my dear, was foolish.
For once, I was tempted to agree with the Emperor. No matter how good my young friend was with gourds and pollen, no matter how glad I was to have her at my side, I couldn't imagine us getting out of this room alive unarmed. The Germani hefted their spears. The imperial demigods drew their swords. The wolf-headed warriors snarled. Nero raised his hand, ready to give the kill command. When behind me, a mighty boom shook the chamber. Half our enemies were thrown off their feet. Cracks sprouted in the windows and the marble columns. Ceiling tiles broke, raining dust like split bags of flour. I turned to see the impenetrable blast doors lying twisted and broken. A strangely emaciated red bull standing in the breach. Behind it stood Nico D'Angelo. Safe to say, I had not been expecting this kind of party crasher. Clearly, Nero and his followers hadn't either. They stared in amazement as the Taurus Silvestri lumbered across the threshold. Where the bull's blue eyes should have been, there were only dark holes. Its shaggy red hide hung loosely over its reanimated skeleton like a blanket. It was an undead thing with no flesh or soul, just the will of its master. Nico scanned the room. He looked worse than the last time I'd seen him. His face was covered in soot, his left eye swollen shut. His shirt was ripped to shreds, and his black sword dripped with some sort of monster blood. Worst of all, someone, I'm guessing a Trog, had forced him to wear a white cowboy hat. I half expected him to say yee-haw in the most unenthusiastic voice ever. For the benefit of his skeleton bull, he pointed at Nero and said, "Kill that one." The bull charged. The followers of Nero went crazy. Germani rushed the creature like linebackers going after a wide receiver, desperate to stop it before it reached the dais. The cynocephali howled and bounded in our direction. The imperial demigods faltered, looking at each other for direction like, who do we attack? The bull? The emo kid? Dad? Each other? This is the problem when you raise your children to be paranoid murderers. Vercorix! Nero shrieked, his voice a half octave higher than usual. He leaped onto his couch, madly punching buttons on his Sassanid gas remote control, and apparently deciding that it was not, in fact, his Sassanid gas remote control. Bring me the other controls! Hurry! Halfway to the bull, Vercorix stumbled and reversed course for the coffee table, perhaps wondering why he'd taken this promotion, and why Nero couldn't fetch his own stupid remotes. Meg tugged at my arm, shaking me from my stupor. Get up! She dragged me out of the path of the cynocephalus, who landed next to us on all fours, snarling and slavering. Before I could decide whether to fight him with my bare hands or my bad breath, Nico leaped between us, his sword already in motion. He slashed the wolfman into dust and dog fur.
Hey, guys.
Nico's swollen eye made him look even fiercer than usual.
You should probably find some weapons.
I tried to remember how to speak. How did you... Wait, let me guess. Rachel sent you.
Yep.
Our reunion was interrupted by the second wolf-headed warrior, who loped toward us more cautiously than his fallen comrade, edging sideways and looking for an opening. Nico fended him off with his sword and his scary cowboy hat. But I had a feeling we'd be getting more company soon. Nero himself was still screaming on his sofa, while Vrakorix fumbled with the tray of remote controls. A few feet away from us, the Germani were piling on top of the skeleton bull. Some of the Imperial demigods ran to help them. But three of the more devious members of the family were hanging back, eyeing us. No doubt pondering the best way to kill us so they could get a gold star from Daddy on their weekly chore chart. "What about the Sassanid gas?" I asked Nico.
"Trog's still working on that."
I muttered a curse that would not have been appropriate for the ears of a youngster like Meg, except that Meg had taught me this particular curse.
"Has Camp Half-Blood evacuated?" Meg asked.
I was relieved to hear her join the conversation. It made me feel like she was still one of us.
Nico shook his head. "No, they're fighting against Nero's forces on every floor. We warned everyone about the gas, but they won't leave until you guys leave."
I felt a surge of gratitude and exasperation. Those stupid, beautiful Greek demigods. Those brave, wonderful fools. I wanted to punch them all and then give them a big hug. The cynocephalus lunged.
"Go,"
Nico told us. I sprinted toward the entrance where I dropped my supplies, Meg right beside me. A Germanus flew overhead, kicked into oblivion by the bull. The zombie monster was about 20 feet from the Emperor's dais now, struggling to make it to the goal line. But it was losing momentum under the weight of a dozen bodies. The three devious demigods were now prowling in our direction, paralleling our course toward the front of the room. By the time I reached my possessions, I was gasping and sweating like I'd just run a marathon. I scooped up my ukulele, knocked an arrow in my bow, and aimed at the approaching demigods. But two of them had disappeared. Perhaps they'd taken cover behind the columns? I fired at the only demigod still visible. Emilia, was it? But either I was weak and slow, or she was exceptionally well-trained. She dodged my shot and kept coming. "What about weapons for you?" I asked Meg, knocking another arrow. She chin-pointed toward her foster sibling.
"I'll take hers. You concentrate on Nero."
Off she ran in her silk dress and sandals, like she was about to lay waste to a black tie event. Nico was still dueling with the wolf dude. The zombie bull finally collapsed under the weight of Team Nero, meaning it wouldn't be long before the Germani came looking for new targets to tackle. Vrakorix tripped and fell as he reached the Emperor's sofa, spilling the entire tray of remote controls across the cushions.
"That one! That one!"
Nero yelled unhelpfully, pointing to all of them. I took aim at Nero's chest. I was thinking how good it would feel to make this shot, when someone leaped out of nowhere and stabbed me in the ribs. Clever Apollo. I had found one of the missing demigods. It was one of Nero's older boys. Lucius, perhaps? I would have apologized for not remembering his name, but since he had just driven a dagger into my side and now had me locked in a death embrace, I decided we could dispense with formalities. My vision swam. My lungs refused to fill with air. Across the room, Meg fought barehanded against Emilia and the third missing demigod, who had apparently also been waiting in ambush. Lucius drove his knife in deeper. I struggled, sensing with detached medical interest that my ribs had done their job. They deflected the blade from my vital organs, which was great, except for the excruciating pain of having a knife embedded between my skin and rib cage, and the massive amount of blood now soaking through my shirt. I couldn't shake Lucius. He was too strong, too close. In desperation, I yanked back my fist and gave him a big thumbs up right in the eye. He screamed and staggered away. Eye injuries. The absolute worst. I'm a medical god, and they even make me squeamish. I didn't have the strength to knock another arrow. I stumbled, trying to stay conscious as I slipped in my own blood. It's always a fun time when Apollo goes to war. Through the haze of agony, I saw Nero smiling triumphantly, holding aloft a remote control.
Finally!
No, I prayed. Zeus, Artemis, Leto, anybody! No! I couldn't stop the Emperor. Meg was too far away, barely holding her own against her two siblings. The bull had been battered into a pile of bones. Nico had dispatched the wolfman, but now faced a line of angry Germani between him and the throne.
It's over, Nero gloated. Death to my enemies!
And he pushed the button. 30. Staying alive is really hard when you're always trying to kill me. Death to my enemies was an excellent battle cry, a true classic, delivered with conviction. Some of the drama was lost, however, when Nero pushed the button and the shades on the windows began to lower. The Emperor uttered a curse, perhaps one Meg had taught him, and dove into his sofa cushions, looking for the correct remote. Meg had disarmed Emilia, as she'd promised, and was now swinging her borrowed sword while more and more of her foster siblings encircled her, anxious to have a part in taking her down. Nico waded through the Germani. They outnumbered him more than 10-1, but they quickly developed a healthy respect for his Stygian iron blade. Even barbarians can master a steep learning curve if it is sharp and painful enough. Nico couldn't last forever against so many, though, especially since their spears had a longer reach, and Nico could only see through his right eye. Vercorix barked at his men, ordering them to surround D'Angelo. Unfortunately, the grizzled lieutenant seemed much better at mustering his forces than he was at delivering remote controls. As for me, how can I explain the difficulties of using a bow after being stabbed in the side? I was not dead yet, which confirmed that the blade had missed all my important arteries and organs, but raising my arm made me want to scream in pain. Actually aiming and drawing my bow was torture, worse than anything in the fields of punishment, and Hades can quote me on that. I'd lost blood. I was sweating and shivering. Nevertheless, my friends needed me. I had to do what I could. Mountain Dew, Mountain Dew, I muttered, trying to clear my head. First, I kicked Lucius in the face and knocked him out, because the sneaky little so-and-so deserved it. Then I fired an arrow at one of the other Imperial demigods, who was about to stab Meg in the back. I was reluctant to kill, remembering Cassius's terrified face in the elevator, but I hit my target in the ankle, causing him to scream and do the chicken walk around the throne room. That was satisfying. My real problem was Nero. With Meg and Nico overwhelmed, the Emperor had plenty of time to fish through his sofa cushions for remotes. The fact that his blast doors were destroyed did not seem to dampen his enthusiasm for flooding the tower with poison gas. Perhaps, being a minor god, he would be immune. Perhaps he gargled with Sassanid gas every morning. I fired at the Emperor's center mass, a shot that should have split his sternum. Instead, the arrow shattered on his toga. The garment had some form of protective magic, perhaps. Either that, or it was made by a really good tailor. With a great deal of pain, I knocked another arrow. This time I targeted Nero's head. I was reloading much too slowly. Every shot was an ordeal for my tortured body, but my aim was true. The arrow hit him right between the eyes and shattered uselessly. He scowled at me from across the room.
Stop that!
Then he went back to searching for his remote. My spirits fell even further.
Clearly, Nero was still invulnerable. Lugiselwa had failed to destroy his fasces.
That meant we faced an emperor who had 3 times the power of Caligula or Commodus,
and they hadn't exactly been pushovers. If Nero ever stopped obsessing about his poison gas gadget and actually attacked us, we would be dead. New strategy. I aimed at the remote controls. As he picked up the next one, I shot it out of his hand. Nero snarled and grabbed another. I couldn't fire fast enough. He pointed the gadget at me and mashed the buttons like this might erase me from existence. Instead, 3 giant TV screens lowered from the ceiling and flickered to life. The first showed local news, a live feed from a helicopter circling this very tower. Apparently, we were on fire. So much for the tower being indestructible. The second screen showed a PGA tournament. The third was split between Fox News and MSNBC, which side by side should have been enough to cause an antimatter explosion. I suppose it was a sign of Nero's apolitical bent, or perhaps his multiple personalities, that he watched them both. Nero growled in frustration and tossed the remote away.
Apollo, stop fighting me. You will die anyway. Don't you understand that? It's me or the reptile.
The statement rattled me, making my next shot go wide. It hit the groin of the long-suffering Vercorix, who went cross-legged in pain as the arrow corroded his body to ash.
Dude,
I muttered. I am so sorry. At the far end of the room, behind Nero's dais, more barbarians appeared, marching to the emperor's defense with their spears ready. Did Nero have a broom closet packed with reinforcements back there? That was totally unfair. Meg was still encircled by her foster siblings. She'd managed to get a shield, but she was hopelessly outnumbered. I understood her desire to abandon the dual scimitars Nero had given her, but I was starting to question the timing of that decision. Also, she seemed determined not to kill her attackers, but her foster siblings had no such reservations. The other demigods closed in around her, their confident smirks indicating that they sensed imminent victory. Nico was losing steam against the Germani. His sword seemed to become 10 pounds heavier every time he swung it. I reached for my quivers and realized I had only 1 arrow left to shoot, not including my Shakespearean life coach from Dodona. Nero pulled out yet another remote. Before I could take aim, he pressed a button. A mirrored ball lowered from the middle of the ceiling. Lights flashed. The Bee Gees' Stayin' Alive began to play, which everyone knows is one of the top 10 omens of impending doom in the Prophecy for Morons handbook. Nero threw away the remote and picked up, oh gods, the last controller. The last one is always the right one. Nico, I yelled. I had no chance of bringing Nero down. Instead, I fired at the Germanus, who stood directly between the son of Hades and the throne, blasting the barbarian to nothingness. Bless his fancy cowboy hat, Nico understood. He charged, breaking out of the ring of Germani and leaping straight for the emperor with all his remaining strength. Nico's downward slash should have cleaved Nero from head to devil tail. But with his free hand, the emperor grabbed the blade and stopped it cold. The Stygian iron hissed and smoked in his grip. Golden blood trickled from between his fingers. He yanked the blade away from Nico and tossed it across the room. Nico lunged at Nero's throat, ready to choke him or make him into a Halloween skeleton. The emperor backhanded him with such force, the son of Hades flew 20 feet and slammed into the nearest pillar.
You fools cannot kill me, Nero roared to the beat of the Bee Gees. I am immortal!
He clicked his remote. Nothing obvious happened, but the Emperor screeched with delight.
That's it! That's the one! All your friends are dead now!
Meg screamed in outrage. She tried to break out of her circle of attackers, as Nico had done, but one of the demigods tripped her. She crashed face first onto the carpet. Her borrowed sword clattered from her grip. I wanted to run to her aid, but I knew I was too far away. Even if I shot the arrow of Dodona, I couldn't take down an entire group of demigods. We had failed. In the tower below, our friends would now be choking to death. The entire camp wiped out with a single click of Nero's remote. The Germani hauled Nico to his feet and dragged him before the throne. The imperial demigods pointed their weapons at Meg, now prone and helpless.
Excellent!
Nero beamed.
But first things first. Guards! Kill Apollo!
The Germani reinforcements barreled toward me. I fumbled for my ukulele, desperately reviewing my repertoire for a song that would produce a stunning reversal of fortunes. I believe in miracles. Make it right. Behind me, a familiar voice roared.
Stop!
The tone was so commanding, even Nero's guards and family members turned toward the broken blast doors. On the threshold stood Will Solace, radiating brilliant light. At his left was Lugu Selwa, alive and well, her stumps now outfitted with daggers instead of silverware. At Will's right was Rachel Elizabeth Dare, holding a large axe wrapped in a golden bundle of rods. The fasces of Nero.
No one hits my boyfriend, Will thundered. And no one kills my dad.
Nero's guards made ready to attack, but the Emperor cried,
Everyone freeze!
His voice was so shrill, several of the Germani looked back to be sure he was the one who spoke. The demigods of the imperial family did not look pleased. They'd been about to give Meg the Julius Caesar in the Senate treatment. But at Nero's command, they stayed their weapons. Rachel Dare scanned the room. The pollen-covered furniture and barbarians, the overgrown dryad trees, the pile of bull bones, the cracked windows and columns, the shades still going up and down on their own, the TVs blaring, the Bee Gees playing, the disco ball swirling.
What have you guys been doing in here?
She muttered.
Will Solace strode confidently across the room, barking, Out of my way, to the Germani.
He marched straight to Nico and helped the son of Hades to his feet. Then he dragged Nico back to the entrance. No one tried to stop them. The Emperor inched backward on his dais. He put one hand behind him, as if to reassure himself that his sofa was still there, in case he needed to faint dramatically. He ignored Will and Nico. His eyes were fixed on Rachel and the Fasces.
You.
Nero wagged his finger at my red-headed friend.
You're the Pythia.
Rachel hefted the Fasces in her arms like a baby. A very heavy, pointy, golden baby.
Rachel Elizabeth Dare, she said. And right now, I'm the girl holding your life in her hands.
Nero licked his lips. He frowned, then grimaced, as if exercising his facial muscles for an onstage soliloquy.
You all should be dead.
He sounded both polite and vexed, as if chiding our comrades for not calling first before dropping by for dinner. From behind Lugu Selwa, a smaller figure emerged.
Rat!
Bling, CEO of Troglodyte Inc.,
festooned with six new hats atop his tricorn. His grin was almost as bright as Will Solace.
"Gas traps are finicky," he said. "Have to be sure the detonators are working."
He opened his hand and let 4 9-volt batteries tumble to the floor. Nero glared at his foster children as if to say, "You had one job."
"And how exactly?"
Nero blinked and squinted. The glow of his own fasces seemed to hurt his eyes.
"The Leontocephaline. You couldn't have defeated him."
"I didn't."
Lou stepped forward, allowing me a closer look at her new attachments. Someone, I guessed Will, had fixed her up with fresh bandages, more surgical tape, and better blades, giving her a low-budget Wolverine look.
"I traded what the Guardian required. My immortality."
"But you don't have—"
Nero's throat seemed to close up. A look of dread came over his face, which was like watching someone press on wet sand and expel water from the center. I had to laugh. It was totally inappropriate, but it felt good. "Lou has immortality," I said, "because you're immortal. The two of you have been connected for centuries." Nero's eye twitched.
"But that's my eternal life. You can't trade my life for my life."
Lou shrugged. "It's a little shady, I agree. But the Leontocephaline seemed to find it amusing." Nero stared at her in disbelief.
"You would kill yourself just to kill me."
"In a heartbeat," Lou said. "But it won't come to that. I'm just a regular mortal now. Destroying the fasces will do the same to you."
She gestured to her Germanic former comrades.
"And all your other guards, too. They'll be free of your bondage. Then we'll see how long you last."
Nero laughed as abruptly as I had.
"You can't! Don't any of you understand? All the power of the triumvirate is mine now. My fasces."
His eyes lit with sudden hope.
"You haven't destroyed it yet because you can't. Even if you could, you'd release so much power it would burn you to cinders. And even if you didn't mind dying, the power, all the power I've been accumulating for centuries would just sink into Delphi. To him. You don't want that, believe me."
The terror in his voice was absolutely genuine. I finally realized just how much fear he'd been living with. Python had always been the real power behind the throne. A bigger puppet master than Nero's mother had ever been. Like most bullies, Nero had been shaped and manipulated by an even stronger abuser.
"You, Pythia," he said. "Raquel."
"Rachel."
"That's what I said. I can influence the reptile. I can convince him to give you your powers back, but kill me and all is lost. He doesn't think like a human. He has no mercy, no compassion. He'll destroy the future of our kind."
Rachel shrugged. "Seems to me that you've chosen your kind, Nero. And it isn't humanity." Nero cast his eyes desperately around the room. He fixed his gaze on Meg, who was now on her feet, swaying wearily in the circle of her imperial siblings.
"Meg, dear, tell them. I said I would let you choose. I trust your sweet nature, your good senses."
Meg regarded him as if he were a distasteful wall painting. She addressed her foster siblings.
what you guys have done up till now, it isn't your fault. It's Nero's fault. But now you've got to make a choice. Stand up to him like I did. Drop your weapons. Nero hissed. Ungrateful child. The beast. The beast is dead.
Meg tapped the side of her head. I killed it.
Surrender, Nero. My friends will let you live in a nice prison somewhere. It's more than you deserve.
That, Lou said, is the best deal you're going to get, Emperor. Tell your followers to stand down. Nero looked on the verge of tears. He seemed like he was ready to set aside centuries of tyranny and power struggles and to betray his reptile overlord. Villainy, after all, was a thankless, exhausting job. He took a deep breath. Then he screamed,
"Kill them all!"
And a dozen Germani charged me. 31. Godly tug of war. Not recommended for kids. Or Lester's either.
We all make our choices.
Mine was to turn and run. Not that I was terrified of a dozen Germani trying to kill me. Okay, yes, I was terrified of a dozen Germani trying to kill me. But also I had no arrows and no strength left. I badly wanted to hide behind, stand next to Rachel Blackbling and my old friend, the low-budget Celtic Wolverine. And Nero's words rang in my ears. Destroying the Fasces would be deadly. I could not allow anyone else to take that risk. Perhaps the Leontocephaline had been amused for reasons Lou hadn't understood. Perhaps my sacrifice couldn't be avoided as easily as she believed. I stumbled into Luguselwa, who managed to catch me without stabbing me to death. Will, still glowing like an overachieving nightlight, had propped Nico against the wall and was now tending to his wounds.
Rah!
Bling let out a high-pitched whistle, and more troglodytes poured into the room, charging the Emperor's forces in a flurry of shrieks, mining picks, and stylish headwear. I gasped for breath, making a grabby hand gesture at Rachel.
Give me the Fasces.
Please, she prompted. And, gee, sorry, I underestimated you, Rachel. You're actually kind of a warrior queen.
Yes, please, and thank you, and all of that.
Lou scowled.
Apollo, are you sure you can destroy it? Without killing yourself?
No, and no, I said.
Rachel stared into the air, as if reading a prophecy written in the dancing lights of the disco ball.
I can't see the outcome, she said, but he has to try.
I took the Fasces, struggling not to collapse under its weight. The ceremonial weapon hummed and shuddered like an overheating race car engine. Its aura made my pores pop and my ears ring. My side started to bleed again, if it had ever really stopped. I wasn't thrilled about the blood trickling down my chest and into my underwear while I had an important job to do. Sorry again, underwear. Cover me, I told the ladies. Lou leaped into battle, stabbing, slashing, and kicking any Germani who got past the troglodytes. Rachel pulled out a blue plastic hairbrush and threw it at the nearest barbarian,
beaming him in the eye and making him howl.
Sorry I underestimated you, Rachel, I thought distantly.
You're actually kind of a hairbrush ninja.
I cast a worried glance across the room. Meg was all right. More than all right. She had convinced all her remaining foster siblings to throw down their weapons. Now she stood in front of them, like a general trying to shore up her demoralized troops. Or a less flattering comparison,
She reminded me of one of Hades's dog trainers, working with a pack of new hellhounds. At the moment, the demigods were obeying her commands and staying put. But any sign of weakness from her, any change in the temperature of the battle, and they might break ranks and slaughter everyone in sight. It didn't help that Nero was stomping up and down on his couch, screeching, "Kill Apollo! Kill Apollo!" as if I were a cockroach he'd just spotted scurrying across the floor. For Meg's sake, I had to hurry. I gripped the fasces with both hands and tried to pry it apart. The golden bundle of rods glowed brighter and warmer, illuminating the bones and red flesh of my fingers. But it didn't budge. "Come on," I muttered, trying again, hoping for a burst of godly strength. "If you need another immortal life as a sacrifice, I'm right here." Maybe I should have felt foolish negotiating with a Roman ceremonial axe. But after my conversations with the Arrow of Dodona, it seemed like a reasonable thing to try. The troglodytes made the Germani look like the bumbling team the Harlem Globetrotters always played. "Sorry, Washington generals." Lou sliced and poked and parried with her knife hands. Rachel stood protectively in front of me and occasionally muttered, "Apollo, now would be good," which I did not find helpful. Meg still had her foster siblings under control for the time being, but that could change. She was talking to them encouragingly, gesturing to me with a look that said, "Apollo has this. He'll destroy Dad any minute. Just watch." I wished I shared her certainty. I took a shaky breath. "I can do this. I just need to concentrate. How hard can it be to destroy myself?" I tried to break the fasces over my knee, which nearly broke my knee. At last, Nero lost his cool. I supposed there was only so much satisfaction he could get from stomping on his sofa and screaming at his minions.
"Do I have to do everything myself?" he yelled. "Do I have to kill you all? You forget. I am a god!"
He jumped off his couch and marched straight toward me, his whole body starting to glow. Because Will Solace couldn't have his own thing, oh no, Nero had to glow too. Trogs swarmed the Emperor. He tossed them aside. Germani, who didn't get out of his way fast enough, were also thrown into the next time zone. Meg looked like she wanted to challenge Nero herself, but any move away from her foster siblings would have shattered their delicate standoff. Nico was still only half conscious. Will was busy trying to revive him. That left Lou and Rachel as my last line of defense. I couldn't have that. They'd been in harm's way for my sake enough already. Nero might have been the most minor of minor gods, but he still had divine strength. His glow was getting brighter as he approached the fasces. Like Will, like me in my own godly moments of rage. A thought came to me. Or maybe something deeper than a thought, a sort of instinctive recognition. Like Caligula, Nero had always wanted to be the new sun god. He designed his giant golden colossus to look like my body with his head on it. This fasces wasn't just his symbol of power and immortality. It was his claim to godhood. What had he asked me earlier? "Are you worthy of being a god?" That was the central question. He believed he made a better deity than I did. Perhaps he was right, or perhaps neither of us was worthy. There was one way to find out. If I couldn't destroy the fasces myself, maybe with a little godly help. "Get out of the way," I told Lou and Rachel. They glanced back at me like I was crazy. "Run," I told them. They broke to either side just before Nero would have plowed through them. The Emperor stopped in front of me, his eyes flickering with power.
"You lose," he said. "Give it to me. Take it if you can."
I began to glow myself. Radiance intensified around me, as it had months ago in Indianapolis. But slower this time, building to a crescendo. The fasces pulsed in sympathy, beginning to superheat. Nero snarled and grabbed the handle of the axe. To our mutual surprise, the strength of my grip was equal to his. We played tug of war, swinging the blade back and forth, trying to kill each other. But neither of us could win. The glow around us increased like a feedback loop, bleaching the carpet under our feet, whitening the black marble columns. Germani had to stop fighting just to shield their eyes. Trog screamed and retreated, their dark goggles insufficient protection.
"You cannot take it, Lester,"
Nero said through clenched teeth, pulling with all his might. "I am Apollo," I said, tugging the other direction. "God of the sun, and I revoke your divinity." The fasces cracked in two, the shaft shattering. The rods and golden blade exploding like a firebomb. A tsunami of flames washed over me, along with thousands of years of Nero's pent-up rage, fear, and insatiable hunger. The twisted sources of his power. I stood my ground, but Nero hurtled backward and landed on the carpet. His clothes smoldering, his skin mottled with burns. My glow started to fade. I was unharmed, or at least no more harmed than I'd been before. The fasces was broken, but Nero remained alive and intact. Had all this been for nothing then? At least he wasn't gloating anymore. Instead, the Emperor sobbed in despair.
"What have you done? Don't you see?"
Only then did he begin to crumble. His fingers disintegrated, his toga frayed into smoke. A glittery cloud plumed from his mouth and nose, as if he were exhaling his life force along with his final breaths. Worst of all, this glitter didn't simply vanish. It poured downward, seeping into the Persian rug, worming into cracks between the floor tiles, almost as if Nero were being pulled, clawed and dragged into the depths, piece by piece.
"You've given him victory,"
he whimpered.
"You've..."
The last of his mortal form dissolved and soaked through the floor. Everyone in the room stared at me. The Germani dropped their weapons. Nero was finally gone. I wanted to feel joy and relief, but all I felt was exhaustion.
"Is it over?" Lou asked.
Rachel stood next to me, but her voice seemed to come from very far away.
"Not yet. Not even close."
My consciousness was dimming, but I knew she was right. I understood the real threat now. I had to get going. There was no time to waste. Instead, I toppled into Rachel's arms and passed out. I found myself hovering over a different throne room. The Council of the Gods on Mount Olympus. Thrones curved around Hestia's great hearth, forming a U. My family, such as they were, sat watching a holographic image that floated above the flames. It was me, lying passed out in Rachel's arms in Nero's tower. So, I was watching them watch me watch them. Nope, too meta. "This is the most critical time," Athena said. She was dressed in her usual armor and oversized helmet, which I'm pretty sure she stole from Marvin the Martian in Looney Tunes.
He is perilously close to failure.
Hmph.
Ares sat back and crossed his arms.
I wish he'd get on with it, then. I have 20 golden drachma riding on this.
That is so callous, Hermes chided. Besides, it's 30 drachmas, and I gave you very good odds. He pulled out a leather-bound notepad and a pencil. Any final bets, people?
Stop,
Zeus rumbled. He was dressed in a somber black three-piece suit, as if on his way to my funeral. His shaggy black beard was freshly combed and oiled. His eyes flickered with subdued lightning. He almost looked concerned for my situation. Then again, he was as good an actor as Nero.
We must wait for the final battle, he announced. The worst is yet to come.
Hasn't he proved himself already?
Artemis demanded. My heart ached seeing my sister again. He suffered more in these last few months than even you could have expected. Whatever lesson you were trying to teach him, dear father, he's learned it.
Zeus glowered. You do not understand all the forces at work here, daughter. Apollo must face the final challenge. For all our sakes.
Hephaestus sat forward in his mechanical recliner, adjusting his leg braces.
And if he fails, what then? 11 Olympian gods. That's a terribly unbalanced number.
It could work, Aphrodite said. Don't you start, Artemis snapped.
Aphrodite batted her eyelashes, feigning innocence.
What? I'm just saying some pantheons have way less than 12. Or we could elect a new 12th.
A god of climate disasters, Ares suggested. That would be awesome. He and I could work well together.
Stop it, all of you.
Queen Hera had been sitting back with a dark veil over her face. Now she lifted it. To my surprise, her eyes were red and swollen. She had been crying.
This has gone on long enough. Too much loss, too much pain. But if my husband insists on seeing it through, the least you all can do is not talk about Apollo as if he's already dead.
Wow, I thought. Who is this woman and what has she done with my stepmother? Not existent, Athena amended. If he fails, his fate will be much worse than death. But whatever happens, it begins now. They all leaned forward, staring at the vision in the flames as my body began to stir. Then I was back in my mortal form, looking up not at the Olympians, but at the faces of my friends.
32.
The final push, fam.
Not throwing away my shot.
Wait, where is my shot?
I was dreaming. I pointed weakly at Meg. And you weren't there. Neither were you, Lou. Or Nico and Will.
Will and Nico exchanged worried looks, no doubt wondering if I had suffered brain damage.
We need to get you to camp, Will said.
I'll get one of the Pegasi.
No.
I struggled to sit up.
I have to leave.
Lou snorted.
Look at yourself, buddy. You're in worse shape than I am.
She was right, of course. At the moment, I doubted my hands were working as well as Lou's dagger attachments. My whole body shook with exhaustion. My muscles felt like worn-out tension cords. I had more cuts and bruises than the average rugby team, nevertheless.
I have no choice, I said. Nectar, please. And supplies. More arrows. My bow.
He's right, unfortunately, Rachel said.
Python.
She clenched her jaw as if forcing down a belch of serpent prophecy gas.
python is getting stronger by the second.
Everyone looked grim, but no one argued. After all we'd been through, why would they? My confrontation with Python was just another impossible task in a day of impossible tasks.
I'll gather some supplies.
Rachel kissed my forehead, then dashed off.
Bow and quiver coming up, Nico said.
And ukulele, Will added.
Nico winced.
Do we really hate Python that much?
Will raised an eyebrow.
Fine.
Nico dashed off, without kissing me on the forehead, which was just as well. He couldn't have reached my forehead with the massive brim of his cowboy hat. Lou glowered at me.
You did good, cellmate.
Was I crying? Had there been any point in the last 24 hours when I hadn't been crying? Lou, you're good people. I'm sorry I mistrusted you.
Eh.
She waved one of her daggers.
That's okay. I thought you were pretty useless, too.
I didn't say useless.
I should go check on the former Imperial family, she said. They're looking a little lost without General Sapling.
She winked at Meg, then lumbered off. Will pressed a vial of nectar into my hands.
Drink this, and this.
He passed me a Mountain Dew. And here's some salve for those wounds. He handed the jar to Meg. Could you do the honors? I have to find more bandages. I used up my supply outfitting Lugaselwa dagger hands. He hurried away, leaving me alone with Meg. She sat next to me, cross-legged, and started finger-painting my ouchies with healing ointment. She had plenty of ouchies to choose from. I alternated drinking my nectar and Mountain Dew, which was sort of like alternating between premium gasoline and regular gasoline. Meg had thrown away her sandals, braving bare feet despite the arrows, rubble, bones, and discarded blades that littered the floor. Someone had given her an orange camp half-blood shirt, which she'd put on over her dress, making her allegiance clear. She still looked older and more sophisticated, but she also looked like my Meg. I'm so proud of you, I said. I definitely was not weeping like a baby. You are so strong, so brilliant, so... Ow! She poked the dagger wound in my side, effectively silencing my compliments.
Yeah, I know. I had to be. For them.
She chin-pointed to her wayward foster siblings, who had broken down in the wake of Nero's death. A couple of them stormed around the room, throwing things and screaming hateful comments, while Lugaselwa and some of our demigods stood by, giving them space, watching to make sure the Imperials didn't hurt themselves or anyone else. Another child of Nero was curled up and sobbing between two Aphrodite campers who'd been pressed into service as grief counselors. Nearby, one of the youngest Imperials appeared catatonic in the arms of a Hypnos camper, who rocked the child back and forth while singing lullabies. In the space of an evening, the Imperial children had gone from enemies to victims who needed help, and Camp Half-Blood was stepping up to the challenge.
They'll need time, Meg said, and a lot of good support, like I got.
They'll need you, I added. You showed them the way out. She gave me a one-shoulder shrug.
You really got a lot of wounds.
I let her work, but as I sipped my high-octane beverages, I considered that perhaps courage was a self-perpetuating cycle, like abuse. Nero had hoped to create miniature, tortured versions of himself because that made him feel stronger. Meg had found the strength to oppose him because she saw how much her foster siblings needed her to succeed, to show them another way. There were no guarantees. The Imperial demigods had dealt with so much for so long, some of them might never be able to come back from the darkness. Then again, There had been no guarantees for Meg, either. There were still no guarantees that I would come back from what awaited me in the caverns of Delphi. All any of us could do was try, and hope that, in the end, the virtuous cycle would break the vicious one. I scanned the rest of the throne room, wondering how long I had been unconscious. Outside, it was full dark. Emergency lights pulsed against the side of the neighboring building from the street far below. The thwomp, thwomp, thwomp of a helicopter told me we were still making local news. Most of the troglodytes had vanished, though Rack Bling and a few of his lieutenants were here, having what looked like a serious conversation with Sherman Yang. Perhaps they were negotiating a division of the spoils of war. I imagine Camp Half-Blood was about to be flush with Greek fire and Imperial gold weapons, while the Trogs would have a fabulous new selection of haberdashery, and whatever lizards and rocks they could find. Demigod children of Demeter were tending the overgrown dryads, discussing how best to transport them back to camp. Over by the Emperor's dais, some of the Apollo kids, my kids, conducted triage operations. Jerry, Jan, and Gracie, the newbies from camp, now all looked like seasoned pros, shouting orders to the stretcher bearers, examining the wounded, treating campers and Germani alike. The barbarians looked glum and dejected. None seemed to have the slightest interest in fighting. A few sports.